Now, when you move to a new area and you have little or indeed no sight, as Paul Quigley has, how did you learn to find your way about? And especially if you don't have a guide dog as well for reassurance. Paul joins us now. Hello.
Hello, Simon. How are you today?
I'm well, thank you. And you moved into a new area fairly recently. And it's not until you do that that you realise, wow, I need to really start to map this area out.
That's absolutely right. Acclimatising yourself to your new geography is the first thing almost that I found I had to do. I mean, it's the simple things such as finding out where the local corner shop was for a pint of milk and a loaf of bread, for the nearest post box, and for the nearest supermarket. This and the bus stop, of course, the transport, getting out and about, and being a white cane user, thanks to the wonderful people at Tameside Borough Council, a name drop for Jane Catani and Amanda Williams there at Tameside, doing a brilliant job, just the two of them supporting hundreds of people in Tameside on the east of Manchester here. They helped me with white cane training and also acclimatizing myself to the surroundings of Ashton near where I live. And yes, absolutely. And it's about building confidence, I think, Simon. It's about confidence building.
How recently did you actually learn to use the white cane then? Because that was a bit of an issue as well for you, wasn't it, initially?
Absolutely was, because for years I was in denial of being blind. I was very much wanted to hold on to what I thought, you know, having been sighted. Well, I call that, to use that word with air quotes around sighted, because I mean, you know, night blind and highly myopic and having retinitis pigmentosa in my genetics, it's as one of those creeping death sort of degenerative diseases, but where I had some visual acuity, to have lost that finally when your macula and your periphery goes, you're finally on your own. And it is, and I went, finally got round to white stick training after a lot of being leaned on by Jane at Tameside Social Services visual impairment team, who was absolutely brilliant at doing that and trying to say, listen, this is your lifeline, this is your independence. And I finally started to get training with her. And quite honestly, I don't think I would venture out now. I wouldn't. In fact, I know I wouldn't, because I'd be too frightened to go out, because the traffic around here could be quite heavy. And it's not always easy to navigate around big crossings when you get to a dual carriageway or a main A road. And there are those little, what they call twizzlers. There's little round things that rotate underneath us, that finding them, even just finding them, is an absolute nightmare a lot of the time. So with a white cane, at least it's more symbolic. You know, at least other people tend to say, oh, you know, can I, you know, do you need any help? That is, to me, is absolutely priceless, because without that symbolic nature of the cane, I would just be utterly, utterly sort of adrift at sea, and I simply hate the experience. I don't enjoy it now, even with the white cane, Simon. So yes, you're right. It's been an absolute, literally an eye-opener, if not a vision seer, but certainly an eye-opener in old parlance, yes.
So, is Ashton you live in?
Near to Ashton, yes, in the east of Manchester.
And yeah. A lot of that's kind of standard housing and areas, and you've got busy roads there. So yes. How did you actually find then getting a way around? Because did you do it like you built up a small picture and then you move a little bit further up the field? Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. It's like, it is exactly like that. It's almost like building a mosaic together and knitting, remembering in your mind. I sort of have to have a mental mind map of where I am. And it's sometimes you even do things like count the number of steps. I mean, you have to, so, you know, the 13 steps down from here, you know, if they're not well delineated or there's no decent handrails, you have to learn to remember how many steps there are, maybe how many paces there are between point A and point B, all sorts of little mnemonics and methods of remembering your place in the world, quite honestly. And it's so difficult to re-engineer your brain in that way, but that you have to think that way about moving about in time and space and distances and orientating yourself that you're in line with the pavement and you're not wandering off into the curb, you know, and being hit by something. I mean, it is very difficult, and you learn tricks like shorelining that Jane taught me, how to basically feel for the edge of the pavement or feel for anything that's sort of in a straight line and keep following that. And of course, at the same time, covering yourself off so that you're not going to hit your knee or your shin, which is obviously the worst thing that could happen. Because my absolute nightmare with this, Simon, is going out and injuring my leg. I mean, then I'm actually in wheelchair territory, and I become immobile in my attempt to be independent. I then put myself even, you know, one step forward, two steps back. And that's my worst nightmare, quite honestly, is always doing things that you know you can cope. But then again, you have to push the envelope at some point. Otherwise, you only stay within your comfort zone. So it's like a catch-22. And every day is a struggle, quite honestly, particularly when you want to get out and about and stay stay independent and part of the real world and have a life, quite honestly. Do you know what I mean, Simon?
Yeah, I do. I mean, how's it going now, though? Are you getting more familiar with where you live now?
Oh, I mean, it's incremental. I mean, every day is a little bit of a step forward, and you have to push yourself to keep navigating and finding these places that you need to go, whether it's the doctor, the dentist, and finding out how to get in the doorway at these places and things like that, and asking for help and not being too afraid to ask for that help and that sort of thing. So, yes, I am. I mean, the answer is yes, and I think anybody would do that. It's just almost like a natural survival instinct. You need to be able to try to get to do the things you have to do. And beyond that, you know, it's going out and about and trying to have actually a little bit of fun. You know what I mean, Simon? I mean, at the end of the day, it's all seemed to be very sort of matter of fact and sort of getting this, you know, the shopping and the bills paid and the post. That's, I mean, we all have to do that. But when does it come for the, you know, when is it fun time? And it's not much fun trying to navigate around when the cars are whizzing around and they've got trucks coming in and off of a motorway intersection. It can, you know, it's your heart in mouth moment. So, yeah, it's tricky sometimes.
And a thing that, and something that I think a lot of us skate round and don't talk about, but I think it is worth thinking about, is the fact of feeling vulnerable when you can't see and you have, yes, a white cane which is there for your benefit. It's also a beacon,
yes,
saying that you don't see.
Yes, it is.
And
yes,
it is. I don't know, do you ever think about the vulnerability of that? Or is it something you just have to live with?
It is, well, it's both. It's I think of it, and you have to live with it. I think the way you mentally that you have to approach that is that, well, I'm quite lucky in a way. He says, touch wood. I'm 6 foot tall and I'm a big guy. So, you know, I go to the gym and I used to do martial arts. So if anybody wants to take me on, then, you know, it's up to you, really. I don't think they would because, I mean, but I mean, if you're a little old lady with a white stick or a frailer person, yes, it is an issue. And I think that, again, I've found in my experience that 99% of people out there are lovely. They're absolutely lovely and they want to help. And the 1%, I don't even notice them because they're out of my vision. Literally, out of my vision. I wouldn't even see them. If they don't want to help, then they choose not to. So, but most of the time, there's always a guardian angel around who'll say, you know, hey, you all right getting in here? And it's just lovely. It's absolutely lovely. But vulnerable, well, you'd never know, do you? I mean, whether you're sighted or not sighted, I think it's the same. A friend of mine here recently, a visually impaired chap, in Tameside called David, he was saying that he was actually in the center of Manchester in broad daylight and he had a backpack on, he said, at the time, and he had his white cane. I think he had a dog actually with him. No, he didn't have the dog. He just had the white cane and he was standing in St. Peter's Square in the middle of Manchester and he felt some movement on his backpack and he put his hand around and somebody, he said, there was a couple of chaps behind him and they just managed to slit the straps off his backpack and ran off with his backpack. Literally, they just ripped it off his back with a knife. They didn't attack him, but they just slit the straps and away they went and he just legged it. And one minute he was sort of la 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 la, blind guy looking around, think I'll go to the museum. To the next minute, he'd been robbed in broad daylight, nothing. I don't know whether there was CCTV footage of that. And I said to him, well, what, you know, does that stop you putting off? He said, oh, no. He said, no, God, no. He said, it'll happen. You know, it happens. I can't allow it to set me inside the house and never, ever go out because then they win. I mean, life's tough enough as it is. And I agree with him. I think even if anything were to happen, what's the alternative? Is to sit inside and cower? That's the same for anybody sighted. But yes, we are vulnerable as unsighted people. Of course we are. And I think we just have to have your faith in God or whichever God you believe in. If you don't believe in God, then just put your faith in the fact that, you know, most of humanity aren't that way inclined and that you still need to, you know, get out there and have a life, even though everything's been thrown at you to make it to the challenge is difficult. But yes, I think it is difficult, Simon. It is.
So it also then part of this is then learning areas where it's wise perhaps to avoid so you can limit, yes, the chances where you are more vulnerable.
Yes, well, that tends to be time of day. I would advise people, you know, if you are going to go out after dark, then be careful because then it tends to be, you know, slightly more the creatures of the night sort of move around in the darkness, don't they, under cover of darkness. So that's a kind of a no-brainer, obvious one, you know, unless you have to. And in that instance, always try and get transport or, you know, because it's just a safety. It's all about risk assessment, isn't it? Risk management and mitigating any risk, you know, because we're not as you said before, with a white cane isn't going to, unless you've got, they turn it into a lightsaber very, very quickly, which is pretty unlikely. You know, you've got to think with your noggin. And I think most people do, whether they, you know, females going around at night, they know how to do this. It's the same with blind people and visually impaired, severely sight impaired people. It's just the same. It's just like, you know, calculate your distances, make sure you know why you're going, when you're going, try and plan a route, and make sure that you just people know that you expect it at certain times, and all the obvious things, really, like you would do when you were going anywhere, as like what parents do with their children, quite rightly so. It's the same. So under cover of dark. But having said that, look, there's the exception that proves the rule, was when Dave was you know, had his bag wrapped in the middle of day. I mean, you could have said to, oh yeah, be fine in the middle of Manchester in daytime, Dave. Oh yeah, but there you go. He probably would have been fine that night. So there's no guarantees. So you have to just take a view and think, right, well, you know, whatever happens, I've got to do this because I've refused to be imprisoned in my own, within my own head. I've got to do this no matter what, but I'll just mitigate the risks. So, you know, that's the way you do it.
On balance, yes, it's a necessary, I'm going to say evil, it's not evil. It's a necessary thing. It's maybe not ideal, but it lets you get out there and know that even if you've got a guide dog and your guide dog has to go in for a service, let's say, to the vets to get some, you know, perhaps or whatever, you know you have that other backup that you can actually get out with a cane.
Yes.
And it's just another string to your bow. Paul, it's been great to chat with you. Thanks very much for being so open with us. And if you're at home thinking, do you know Paul's right, or I found this, we'd like to know what your views are on using a white cane and how it's perhaps changed your life as well. So you can get in touch here at RNIB Connect Radio. It's radio@rnib.org.uk. In the meantime, Paul Quigley, always a pleasure, and always
an
experience as well chatting with you. You always dry my hair.
Thank you, Mr. Paulie. Talk to you again soon.